Chapter 9. 17 December 1930. Seamus O'Malley twirled the three rabbits triumphantly. It was such a dark night he could barely see their outlines now he'd turned the lantern out, but they felt plump and heavy. Shooting them was about the only thing he'd enjoyed doing for days. His life seemed one long stretch of hard labor. He was striding out at a comfortable pace now he was nearly home. It was a pleasure after moving with quiet stealth for so long. He'd almost reached his own front door when a shadow detached itself from the dense black square that was the gatehouse. A torch snapped on, and his heart missed a beat. His shotgun slipped from under his arm and clattered on the frozen ground as he found himself standing in a pool of light. It glinted off the brass tops of the cartridges still in his belt. He tried to hide the rabbits behind him. "It's no good denying it this time, O'Malley. I've caught you red-handed." Leo Bender's voice was full of indignation. Seamus could feel himself shaking. "This is blatant poaching, and if there's ever a next time, I'll have you charged. I could have rung for Constable Watkins to meet me here now. Really, I don't know why I didn't. Do you think I'm both blind and deaf? I saw your light down in my water meadow." Seamus swallowed, his mouth dry. He thought he was being careful. Maisie had been at him to get rabbits all last week, but he'd waited for the wind to change direction so that it carried the sound of his shots away from Yarrow Hall. The boss must have been out spying. There was no way he could see the water meadow from his house. He felt fluttery with guilt. "'Tis just for the past boss, so it is. The bairns are hungry. They've got to be fed." "Not on my game. I won't warn you again." The light reflected up into Leo Bender's face, his high colour heightened by anger. "I knew it was you last month. No other poacher would leave his spent cartridges on the field for me to find." Seamus felt an icy ball in his stomach. He always picked them up. He must have missed one. "I will not have you shooting over my land. Is that clear? The shooting rights are strictly for my use." "Yes, boss." Seamus writhed with frustration. It was all very well for Leo Bender. Shooting was a sport to which he invited his relatives and friends, a pleasure to be guarded jealously. He thought he was being generous because he gave most of what he shot to his tenants and workers, but Maisie wasn't happy with his occasional largesse, and his kids were hungry now. The fact that there was an abundance of rabbits and wood-pigeons at Yarrow, and even an occasional pheasant to be had, made it worse. Leo Bender would hardly miss what Seamus took, but in future he would have to go further afield and shoot over land belonging to neighbouring farmers. "You'd better hand those rabbits over, hadn't you?" Seamus was outraged and would have liked to refuse. He'd been looking forward to having a pan of rabbit stew tomorrow, and he'd planned to get on his bike and go straight down to the Madron Arms. If he could interest the landlord in the third, he'd take the price in beer. Feeling powerless, he watched Leo Bender stride off up the drive, swinging his rabbits, until the dark swallowed him up. He swore loudly. It meant he'd wasted three cartridges, when only minutes before he'd been congratulating himself on making every shot count. Another wave of frustration washed through him. Why did he get so little from life? There was no justice. Everything was so much easier for the likes of Leo Bender. Seamus O'Malley had grown up in Killarney, in a three-roomed bothy, the ninth child in a family of ten. His father, a devout Catholic, farmed 9 acres of hill and kept a cow, 10 sheep and a few chickens. Times were hard, and he had to add to his income where he could. He helped on other farms, did a little building work, and sometimes sailed as an extra hand on a local fishing boat. What he earned was never enough, but he was very proud of his children and what they had been able to achieve. By the time he was half-grown, Seamus was tired of hearing how well they were all doing. He had two brothers in the priesthood, another was rising through the ranks of the executive civil service in London, and a fourth teaching in Dublin. His eldest sister was a nurse, two more taught in the local convent, and the other was a novice in a contemplative order. He was afraid he would never achieve the equal of that. At school, his teachers said he was lazy, and regularly pointed out that he was failing to achieve the standard set by his siblings. But he knew that when the time came, he too would have to leave home to earn a living. He couldn't imagine his father ever boasting about him. He had complained too often. There had been O'Malley relatives living in Liverpool since the potato famines of the last century, and young Seamus was sent to them in the hope that he would settle into city life. He hated the teeming city streets and loathed working in the cigarette factory where his cousins found him a job. He couldn't abide being shut indoors without fresh air. He'd had to get out into the country where he could breathe. He couldn't settle to navvying on the railway cuttings or working on the docks. He survived as a ferry boathand for only 3 months. Farm work seemed to suit him best, and he'd tried 8 different farms before he'd ended up in a tied cottage at Yarrow on 30 shillings a week. At first, this was officially augmented by an occasional sack of potatoes and a limitless supply of skimmed milk, which would only be fed to the calves if they didn't drink it. But now Leo Bender was selling liquid milk, Seamus was rationed to 2 free pints a day. Maisie was very bitter about it. With his growing family to feed, Seamus had had to put his mind to other ways of adding to his income. He found pleasure and profit in poaching river trout from Leo Bender's best pools. He wasn't fond of fish himself, but the landlord would serve him a few pints of best bitter in exchange for his catch. He raided the Benders' orchards for apples and plums, their greenhouse for tomatoes, their fields for vegetables. He also visited their henhouse for eggs and an occasional cockerel. But he desperately needed something in the pantry now. He hated midwinter, with its long dark nights and bitterly cold days sharpening everyone's appetite. He especially hated Christmas. It brought feasting to many people, but he could provide little extra. He didn't like to think of the Christmas trade bringing opportunities for others to earn more money. Every year Leo Bender fattened geese and turkeys in their hundreds, and his flock of capons was the biggest for miles around. He sold them to butchers all over the country, and they were sold in shops as far away as Manchester. Seamus had been doing his best all week to avoid the long sessions of plucking and dressing poultry. He loathed being in the barn, hardly able to breathe for down and feathers floating in the air. Every time the door was opened, they swirled up into his nose and throat again. Because he'd complained, he'd been given the job of screwing their necks and cutting their throats, and though it was done outdoors, he liked it even less. Half-joking, he'd already asked Maisie if she'd prefer a goose or a turkey for Christmas. He'd spent many hours trying to work out how he might help himself to one. But he hadn't had 5 minutes alone with the birds all week, and was unlikely to have, because the Benders brought in casual labour to help at this time of the year. When the birds were weighed and dressed, he had to help carry them into the house, where they had a special storeroom for them. He tramped backwards and forwards until both legs and arms ached, laying them out on shelves and trestles, while Tatty grumbled at the mud he brought into the kitchen passage, and Mrs. Bender kept a check on numbers and made up orders. Once delivered there, they were beyond his reach. Mutinously, he kicked out at a stone. It wouldn't be easy. Most shops wanted a small number of birds with their feathers left on. These were displayed outside, hanging up by their feet, though once inside, the housewife preferred to take home a bird with the job completed. Seamus had been told to pick out the birds with the best plumage for this, and now they were hanging up in the barn. He propped his gun against his front door and made up his mind. This would be the best time to take one. Leo Bender was safely at home with his wife, no doubt complaining about Seamus taking the rabbits. Everybody else had only finished work an hour or so ago, and they'd all been exhausted. It had been after 9 when the boss had let them all go home. It served him right if he lost a good bird. He had it coming. He'd take a turkey, more on it than a goose, and he had a lot of mouths to feed. He wouldn't even wait for Christmas Day. He'd get it into the oven tonight. With a bit of luck, he'd be on the same job again tomorrow, and could replace the one he took, so that the figures would work out right. There were so many, he couldn't believe Leo Bender would notice, but if so, he'd think he'd got his count wrong. Seamus kept to the grass verge on the drive, where his footfall would not be heard. He could find his way to the barn blindfold. The bolt was on the outside of the door, so he had no problem getting in. The atmosphere was heavy with down and the smell of raw birds. It was an effort not to cough. He didn't want to use his lantern. There was no knowing who might see the light, but it was very dark inside. He'd tied the birds by their feet and hung them in pairs. Now he felt along the rail for the 20-pound turkey cock he remembered. He was half tempted to take the turkey hen as well, but one would more than fill his oven. He hesitated. Would he be able to sell one? Not tonight. It was too late now, and he didn't want to keep evidence of his theft in his house. He took the one that felt heaviest and tiptoed out. He'd managed it, but the bird still had its feathers on, and he couldn't risk having traces of those about his place either, in case the Obender should come looking. He made his way down to the river. The going was harder in the dark. He didn't come this way so often. It was full and babbling noisily after the recent rains. Stooping on the bank, he started to pluck the bird, carefully putting each handful of feathers into the swirling water. He could see them being swept downstream, and if he came back this way tomorrow, he could check that nothing was left on the bank to give him away. His back ached long before the job was finished, and his fingers were sore, because he'd already plucked for 6 hours this morning. He took his penknife from his pocket and cleaned the bird too, getting rid of everything he didn't want. He even rinsed the cavities in the river, but by then his hands were frozen. Only the fact that he'd got even with Bender and got himself a good meal spurred him on to the finish. His mood was exultant on the way home, though he was staggering with fatigue and every muscle ached. There were no lights now in Yarrow Farmhouse, nor any of the cottages. Nobody would be any the wiser. When he got home at last and lit the oil lamp swinging from the open beam, the bird seemed enormous. He felt absolutely spent. It was all he could do to pull himself up the stairs. Going into the children's bedroom, he dragged the sleeping Joey to the edge of the bed.
"Come on, get yourself up, you lazy good-for-nothing."
His head was spinning. He felt light-headed, he was so tired.
"There's a job you can do. Wake up, damn you. I want you downstairs."
"What's the time?" Joey gasped.
"Be Jesus, what does the time matter?"
He went to the other side of the curtain, lifted Lizzie from her bed, and stood her on her feet.
"Kindle the fire and get the turkey in the oven," he said. "There's a treat in store for you tomorrow, eh? Christmas is coming early this year, so it is."
"Won't it wait till morning?"
She was rubbing her eyes.
"Would I be waking you now if I wanted it to wait till morning? Get the kettle on and make me some tea, too."
Lizzie was wakened by the movement of the bedsprings beneath her. She opened her eyes to find Peggy already dressing in the morning half-light.
"Is it time?"
This morning they had to be up early. Mrs. Bender was taking Peggy into Talabont to catch the train. Peggy nodded, her teeth clenched in misery.
"You'll like it, Peg, once you're used to it,"
Lizzie consoled as she got out of bed too. There was hardly room for both to dress at once in the curtained-off space. She knew Peggy had been dreading this day. Lizzie's eyes went to the calendar that Mrs. Bender had given her. It hung on a nail over the chest of drawers. Peggy had penciled a heavy circle around 14 July 1932, and the dreaded day had come. On the floor was a large brown paper parcel, tied tightly with plenty of string. It contained all Peggy's worthy possessions. This morning she was leaving home. Her mother had found her a job as a scullery maid in a boarding house for railway men in Crewe. Peggy had had her 14th birthday last week, and up until now she'd never spent a night away from the gatehouse. Lizzie had been dreading it, too. Time was passing so quickly. As the eldest girl, Peggy got them all up for school in the morning. Once Peggy went, Lizzie knew she would be expected to take over.
"Joey, are you awake? Come on, it's time."
As the eldest boy, he was expected to get the fire lit so that the kettle could be boiled for tea. Usually he got up first. It was July, but the morning was dark. There had been a thunderstorm in the night, and the trees, now in full leaf, still dripped moisture. School would break up next week, and Auntie Maisie had decided Peggy must get a job before other school leavers snapped them all up. A thin wail came from the next bedroom, reminding Lizzie that there was yet another new baby. Auntie Maisie was lying in again. The infant had only been born 3 days ago, and intermittent crying had broken their sleep ever since. Lizzie sighed. The single bed she'd shared with Peggy had been exchanged for a double when the time had come to accommodate little Flora as well, but it seemed they wouldn't have it themselves for long. She hurried downstairs. Joey already had the fire blazing up with the kettle swinging on its chain. Lizzie set out mugs and bowls on the table, then ran up to the farm with a jug. Peggy had made porridge the night before and put it in the hay box to keep warm until morning. Now she was stirring it on the hob to bring it back to the boil. Lizzie ran upstairs with breakfast for Auntie Maisie. Uncle Seamus was still asleep on the other side of the double bed and snoring heavily. She could smell the beer fumes as soon as she opened their bedroom door.
"Isn't Uncle Seamus going to work today?"
"Doesn't look like it."
"Shouldn't we wake him?"
"Leave him be."
"He should be milking by now. Mr. Bender will be angry. I'll get some tea for him, shall I? We should wake him."
"No, he'll turn nasty. Let him alone, with our Peggy going and all that." Lizzie saw Auntie Maisie's mouth turn down in misery.
"She'll be all right when she's used to it."
"I'm losing her, aren't I? I hate seeing her go. What mother wouldn't? I wish I could have found something better. I mean, what sort of a life is she going to have? Scullery maid. They'll work her from morning till night. I'd like to do more for her, but she's got to go and earn her own living. You can bring me another cup of tea."
Lizzie pushed the other O'Malley children downstairs in front of her, tying Flora's apron strings as she went. Peggy was wearing her best brown dress. To indicate that she'd left childhood behind, her meagre pigtails were pinned round her head for the first time. They barely met on top. Lizzie saw tears clouding her eyes.
"It'll be all right, Peg," she comforted.
Peggy sniffed hard.
"It'll be your turn next."
"Lizzie isn't going to be a scullery maid," Joey said fiercely from between clenched teeth. "And they're not sending us to different places. Me and Lizzie are staying together, whatever happens."
"Mam says Lizzie could be joining me in 2 years."
She turned cold at the thought and pushed the teacup she'd refilled into Peggy's hand.
"Better take this up to Auntie Maisie and get your goodbyes said."
It seemed only moments later that Lucy Bender, in smart school uniform, was knocking on the front door. Lucy was a weekly boarder and going back to school for the last week before her summer holiday. Lizzie could see the trap halted at the gate, with Mrs. Bender sitting bolt upright holding the reins. She really felt for Peggy as she watched her push her arms into her coat, her mouth clamped into a straight line, her eyes glazed with the effort of holding back her tears.
"You'll have to stay off school to look after Mam for a few days," she said as she kissed Lizzie's cheek.
They all crowded into the porch to watch her climb slowly into the trap and waved until it turned into the road. Lizzie listened until the melancholy plop of Shandy's hoofs and the creak of wooden wheels faded in the distance.
"Come on, time to get ready for school," she said briskly,
mindful that she must take Peggy's place. Penniclip Village School was only 10 minutes' walk down the road. She spread plum jam thickly on thick bread, a double slice for each of them to eat at dinner time.
"I don't like staying home," she said. "Uncle Seamus is here if she wants anything."
"He'll be mad if he has to do anything," Joey hesitated. "Tell you what, we'll both stay home. We stick together, don't we?"
Lizzie nodded, finding comfort in that.
The younger children had gone when a heavy footfall sounded overhead. Joey was biting into the last crust. Lizzie saw him freeze as the stairs creaked. They waited, hardly daring to breathe. All the family was scared of Seamus. They had reason to know his temper could flare up in seconds, and it was always more volatile the morning after he'd had a night on the beer. The latch lifted on the door at the bottom of the stairs, and Seamus, bleary-eyed, slouched into the room. He towered over them. His very size seemed threatening. His unshaven jaw had a mean line. He went straight to the teapot and emptied an inch of dregs into a clean cup.
"You," he turned on Lizzie, "make me some tea."
She was on her feet when his face turned crimson.
"You stupid devils," he spat. "The fire's gone out, so it has. You've let it."
For the first time Lizzie noticed there was nothing but white ash in the grate. The few small pieces of wood Joey had put on to get a quick blaze to boil the kettle had burned away.
"Never think of anyone but yourselves," Seamus raged.
At 40 he was a heavy man gone to seed, with black hair and a high colour to his face. His dark eyes were cruel and calculating. Physical work ought to have kept him lean, but his taste for beer had given him a large gut. In the summer he wore denim work trousers, and in the winter brown corduroys, held up with the same leather belt. Seamus was proud of his belt. It sported an ornate brass buckle with several brass bars.
"Sorry," Joey said. "There's more wood here."
"It'll need paper and sticks again before that'll catch. Any fool can see that. What you thinking of, Joey?"
He lifted the poker and raked until white ash rose in a cloud to mantelpiece height.
"I'll get the sticks."
Lizzie fled to the lean-to beyond the pantry where they were kept.
"Let me do it, Dad," Joey said.
"I want a cup of tea," Seamus bellowed. "Everybody else has had one."
"It won't take long,"
Lizzie said, rushing to refill the kettle.
"Lazy, good-for-nothing devils."
Lizzie knew Joey wouldn't take much of this.
"You can talk," he muttered mutinously, pushing dried moss and wood shavings into the grate and laying sticks on top.
Lizzie froze as she saw Seamus raise the poker he still held in his hand. He seemed about to bring it down on Joey's shoulders. The strength was draining from her knees as she gave a choking cry and rushed at him, knocking the poker from his grasp. It clattered on the flagged floor and rolled under the table. He turned on her savagely.
"You little bitch! What do you think you're doing?"
He was advancing, unfastening his belt, his face suddenly puce with rage. They'd all felt the buckle of his belt as he lashed out at them. Lizzie still had wheels and scratches on her legs from the last time. Often it happened when they least expected it. She'd got into the habit of watching his hands, ready to run if they strayed near his belt. She backed off, but wasn't quick enough. He was pinning her against the scullery wall when she wanted to escape through the front door. She caught a glimpse of Joey behind him, a murderous look on his thin face. The belt buckle was spinning through the air. Lizzie turned her face away to protect it, sick with terror. She felt her hair flick in the draught it made.
"Run!" Joey was shouting. "Run, Lizzie!"
She knew he'd launched himself at his father in order to free her. She saw Seamus stumble because he'd been caught off balance. He fell back against the table. His weight made it scrape 18 inches across the flagstones. He went down like a felled tree, catching his head against the oil lamp, making it swing wildly from the beams. Then he slumped to the floor, pushing the table still further. He groaned, then lay still. In the shocked silence, Lizzie met Joey's eyes, white with consternation. One quite clearly tea brown, and the other slate blue.
"Christ, he'll kill us," he said, grabbing her hand and half-dragging her out of the house.
He headed up the drive towards the stables. Lizzie raced with him until she gasped for breath. Fear spurred her on. The early morning rain had eased to a light drizzle, but it was enough to soak her pinafore.
Joey's face was running with moisture as he urged her up the ladder to the hayloft. "Shandy will be brought back soon," he whispered. "We'll have to be quiet."
"Uncle Seamus will belt into us," she quaked.
"I won't let him hurt you."
"It was an accident." She clung to Joey's thin frame. "Do you think he's dead?"
"No," said Joey. "Take more than that to kill him."
"He's hurt bad, though,"
Lizzie worried.
"We shouldn't have run away and left him."
The pounding of her heart was gradually slowing as she got her breath back.
"Got to take care of ourselves," Joey puffed. "First rule in this life. If Dad wasn't hurt, he'd have murdered us."
It was several hours before they plucked up courage to go home. They'd been watching, and knew Seamus had not turned up for work. Filled with dread, Joey paused on the gatehouse step, his heart thudding like an engine.
"Go on,"
Lizzie urged. She was so close behind him, he could feel her breath on his neck. He pushed open the door and went into the living room.
"Where have you two been?"
Maisie was belligerent.
"Thought you'd gone for good."
The table was back in its usual position. A fire blazed in the grate. The kettle sang on its chain. His mother was in the old chair, rocking furiously, with the new baby gripped tightly to her shoulder.
"Where's me dad?"
Joey couldn't lift his eyes from the floor where he'd last seen him stretched out.
"Fighting him, were you?" "No."
Joey was indignant.
"He went for me."
"Well, you've done for him this time."
"Where is he?"
He felt cold with fear.
"Gone to hospital. Doctor thinks he's broke his leg."
He met Lizzie's horror-stricken gaze.
"Serve him right," he blustered. "It was his fault."
"So, what are we all going to live on now? If his leg is broke, your dad won't be earning for months. It costs, too, being in hospital." Joey swallowed hard.
"Mr. Bender might turn us out, too."
"He won't," Lizzie comforted.
"Course he won't. Won't put Lizzie out of house and home. He'll be paying your dad's wages to someone else. It stands to reason he'll have to get other help. And where's he going to live?
Needn't be here."
Joey felt a ball of agony in his stomach.
"We've all got to eat, and a new baby only 3 days old."
"I'll see we don't starve,"
Joey said, putting on a show of confidence he didn't feel.
"A good job our Peggy's gone. One less mouth to feed."
"We'll be all right, Mum. I've told you. I'll see to it. It won't be hard."
She hooted with forced laughter.
"You young fool, of course it'll be hard. You'll be glad to have him out of the way. See if you aren't."
His mother's dark gypsy eyes stared into his helplessly.
"You're the eldest now, Joey. 12, aren't you? You'll have to get food for us."
"I've said I will, haven't I?"
"We'll all help," Lizzie echoed.
The days were passing. The food they had was gradually being used up. Joey began to worry. He knew the money in his mother's purse was being used up, too, as she sent Lizzie to buy smaller and smaller amounts of bread and tea in the village shop.